Okay.
Good morning. As we explained yesterday, the deeper principle of the blue and the white, which is also used by Korach to justify his approach. So if you look at the beginning of Parsha, said Vayikach Korach, Korach took himself aside, and then describes his Yichus, son of Yitzchak, son of Ben Levi. So he felt that he was the right person to take over. In fact, as is described in the Midrashim, which read between the words and between the lines, he thought he should really be the high priest, that was inside. But the outside, it's good to close the door. And on the outside, he made out, as is the way of demagogues, that he claimed, we might say, for the people of Israel, vox populi, vox Dei, the voice of the people, is that the voice of Hashem? He said, they're all holy, and Hashem is within them. So why do you raise yourself up over the community of Hashem? Now here we find a psychological principle mentioned by the sages, which applies to all of us, to some extent, some less and some more. Some hide it completely, but it's there underneath, and some you can see it from the expression, that kol aposel, b'mum aposel. If a person finds faults in others, and he leads that criticism of faults in others to the highest extreme, so then, frequently, they're really expressing their own blemish. They don't see it themselves, or they hardly see it, but they see it in everybody else. What was the claim? We know Moshe and Aaron, they were the humblest of people. When they were attacked, they said, "V'nachnu ma'ak, who are we? We're nothing. We're just the agents of Hashem." And the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu was his humility. It says, "Anav mikol adam." I mean, he was completely humble. He nullified himself in front of Hashem. But what was the claim? That Matuzit Nasu, why do you, Moshe and Aaron, you choose people from your family to have higher positions? I mean, he felt that he should really be the Nasi, instead of Eitzafan, he thought he should be the one who should be the prince over the tribe of Levi. And ultimately it meant to criticism of Moshe and Aaron. But that's what he says, Moshe and Aaron. Why do you make yourselves great? Everybody's holy. Everybody's equal. We live in a complete democracy. And therefore you've got no right to take over such dictatorial leadership. Sometimes we find this today as well, generally speaking. People criticize others in an exaggerated fashion. It's usually their own mistake. Now this is expressed in the words of the sages. Since the sages say, Rashi brings it, since Korach was such an educated, he was a very clever person. So what made him see his mistake? So the sages say, Mitzvah, look in Rashi on verse 7, Rashi says, Mara alishtutzu. What did he see? Eino hitato, his eye led him astray. Now here we have a beautiful interpretation, which goes very deep, and gives an understanding for many phrases in the Tanakh, What do you mean, his eye? The sages explained his eye caused him to make a mistake because he did see something. What did he see? Any of you know?
Yeah, his children.
Huh?
His children, grandchildren.
That's right. He saw who was going to be descended from him. Which, by the way, includes the Bnei Korach. The Bnei Korach are mentioned more than any other group to have partly composed or be involved in the composition of many of the Tehillim and the Sefer Bnei Korach. They also described, we know that from the Bnei Korach, they were the ones chosen to carry the ark. There was a Bnei Kohat. Bnei Korach and Ben Kohat. And Bnei Kohat had to carry the ark, the holy ark. And the Bnei Korach survived. The Bnei Korach lometu. It's true that they were swallowed up originally in the earthquake, but they got caught at one ledge in the earthquake. They saw what was happening to Korach and other people. So some of the Bnei Korach said, maybe all of them, they said, we're not going to join in this rebellion. We do teshuva. So they were saved. And I'm happy they were saved. Because, tell you the truth, according to a pretty reliable family tree, I wouldn't be here to speak about it if they wouldn't have been saved. When Avraham, our son, was in the cheder, and they came to the parsha of Korach. So he said, "My Zaydi, Korach." That's my Zaydi. Also, where the Bnei Korach? Why? Because I'll tell you where it comes from. The Shla Kadosh is the Levi, Shayu. The Levi, Ish Horovitz. He is our ancestor, as we know from certain graveyard inscriptions. Therefore, it's a pretty reliable source that we descended from the Shiloh. As a result of which, also we got involved in when we came here. Of course, we went up to Tiberia to go to the place where he's buried next to the burial place of the Rambam. And all it said on the Matseva was Kan Nikba Al Shiloh HaKodesh. Doesn't even give its name properly. That's when we came. So we arranged together with the Family Horowitz Society, and I had this course prepare the text for the fuller description of Yishai Halevi Horowitz and where he was the Rav and his forum and so on. We put it on the Matseva. And he traces his descent also to Rav Zerachi Halevi, the Baal HaMa'or, as can be seen in all the genealogies. And Rav Zerachi Halevi traces his descent, you go back a bit further, to the Bnei Korach. So Haman, go to Haman, who was one of the major sons of the Bnei Korach. Was mentioned also in Divrei Hayamim as one of the singers. The Leviim were either, as you'll see in the old city, you'll see Rechov HaMeshorarim or Rechov HaShoarim. This is the street of the singers. Another street is the street of the gatekeepers. My father, Tzadik Lebroch, used to say to us, well, if you could sing well, then maybe you'll become one of the singers. And if you can't sing well, you'll have to just be one of the gatekeepers. To encourage all of us to sing. So also, Baruch Hashem, say some of my sons and grandsons are great singers. So now listen to this. It's very deep. Why does it say his eye? His eye led him astray. He saw the eye of the chain of saints that would come from him. You know, that's why they made even a family Horowitz association, which includes I would say many tzaddikim as well, and many great rabbanim belong to the family, but also very many great musicians. And some of them, even if they left Torah a bit, they were great in their musical compositions. So Korach's all this coming from him. So therefore he said, well, surely I should be the real high priest. That's really what's looking for. That's why his claim was against Aaron. It's because Moshe said, Aaron, my brother, he was going to be the Kohen Gadol. They said, why is Moshe taking everything and even appointing his brother? They should be the two major leaders, and there's other members of the family, and they're ignoring me. So it says, his eye led him astray. So this is an explanation, a deeper one, given by Meir Shapira. What of Meir Shapira? Today's become well known. He built a fantastic yeshiva, Achmi Lublin, which the Nazis used as a horse stable. And then, Baruch Hashem, the Lublin, it's produced many Gedolei Torah, including, and speak about him, Deicha Tzadik Kadosh Livracha. They made a branch of that yeshiva, which is no existence. And the Nazis destroyed it all. So, although the place has been rededicated for the Jewish people, but unfortunately, there's an attempt there. But I think, I don't know if it's been changed already. A Jewish restaurant was not kosher. So, after now it's become kosher, I hope. But the true continuation of Yeshiva's Chachmi Lublin is the name of the yeshiva in Bnei Brak. And who was the head of the yeshiva? Rav Wozner, Zecher Tzadik Vrocha, who still merited to be a member of that yeshiva. And its greatness was that, first of all, they only took in people who had a very high IQ, very high level of intelligence, and very clever, and very motivated to study Torah. And Rav Meir Shapira trained them. He was a fantastic speaker. And even as a young man, when he came to the Knesset Gedolah, he was chosen to be the spokesman, although he was much younger than the great Gedolim. But it was his Rebbe, they put their messages in his mouth, and they said, you go and speak. And what did he do? He founded the Daf Yomi, the idea of the Daf Yomi, which carries on, which had a certain response in Eastern Europe, but the great response has come in our generation. The Daf Yomi is spreading all over the world in a very high level, and especially through the art school edition, so it's caused hundreds of thousands of people who previously did not really, if they heard a shiur here and there, they didn't take it seriously, but it's given the ability for people who don't know Hebrew even to go and reach a level where in the course of a few years they can become conversant with the Gemara, which is the essence of Torah Shabbat, the bloodstream of the Jewish people. So, Meir Shapira gives this interpretation, which is rooted deep in Jewish tradition, many midrashim. What does it mean, his eye? The human being is given two eyes. He's given one eye, the right eye is Tzad Yamin. So the right eye represents chesed, loving kindness. And in life, you all have to deal with loving kindness. And the left eye is given for criticism, because we need the left eye as well. If you only have the right eye without the left eye, it's self-destructive. There's got to be a balance between the two. In other words, we need midat ha-chesed and we need midat ha-din. An example we can take, extreme example we can take today, when we have suicide bombers, so there are some who say, let's be tolerant, these are poor people, let's be tolerant of them. And people who are being educated, they try their best to become suicide bombers. So, not only non-Jews, but also Jews say, look, they've got a justification, because they've got many, many claims against another group. Perhaps sometimes even become a religious command to go and kill as many as possible, especially those who believe that this life is not as great as even in physical enjoyment as the paradise of the world to come. So if you be a suicide bomber, you get fantastic pleasure, far more than you have in this world. So so they become almost inhibited. They can't think differently the way they've been educated, and therefore people are tolerant. Let's be tolerant of them. Even those who want to do it, well, why not? They've got justification. But if you put them in prison because they're attempts, you've got to let them out. You know, a thousand of them. You have to let them go free with their murderous intentions. That's applying, as it were, Hamrachim al Azarim, Sofoliat Azar al Rahmanim. He who has compassion upon people who are so cruel. And some people will have the same attitude to Desh. What Desh do is so cruel in what they do and how they go about things. And the way that terrorism is growing in the world, some people have got to be tolerant for terrorism. That's behind all these things. Even when there's a nation that says we have to utterly destroy our enemies in every possible manner, all those that believe in our interpretation of the Quran, they have to be eliminated. Be tolerant of them. The tolerance will help make, you know, come to agreements with them. Especially if you're involved in wanting to do good deals, which will bring more money to those who want a lot of money, those countries who want to grow in their ability to be able to have the highest level of economy. So this is what's happening in the world today. And it happened in individual lives. Parents, for example, who are too tolerant of their children, they ruin them. They're so kind to their children, whatever the children want, they'll do for them. And their mothers, it says, compassionate mothers, what do? They boil up their children. They spoil, they destroy them. Why? Because they're so compassionate upon their little children, they let them do whatever the children want. And even if the children shout at them and scream at them, and they want to eat this, that, and the other, they'll give them every ruin their digestion. They'll even ruin them physically, but they spoil them too much. That is applying the quality of chesed without applying the quality of din. So in Hebrew, this is comes up in the Hebrew language. Yamin is that which is appointed. In other words, the purpose of life is to spread chesed. Samol is the poison of God. Why did God create poisons? Why are there poisons in the world? There are a lot of fantastic fruits in the world, and then there's fruits which are poisonous. Why do you make poisons? Well, what's the main poison? What is the main use that people have of poisons today?
Of diseases.
Yeah. Poisons. This is the greatest antibiotic. Poisons are those which heal illnesses. Because when a person overeats or eats the wrong things, they're not good for it because they're too sweet to eat them. Therefore come along poisons and they go and remove the evil qualities of the body. And that applies even the plant world. Some of the poisons, they remove those who destroy the good fruit from the good plant. It goes on. So this is a poison. It's very valuable. So you need the poison of God as well as the loving kindness of God. And that explains us very many things. Similarly, we're given two eyes. There's a famous story told, you know, of the Holocaust. There was a certain SS commander who, many times, liked to play tricks with people. So, you know, they shot people when they felt like it. They made a game of it. This SS commander, one of his eyes was a natural one, and the other one was an artificial one. And he did like this. He took a Jew and asked him, If you must tell me, because he was proud of his unnatural eye, that it looked exactly like a true eye. And he said, listen, really I should kill you. Yeah? I'm going to kill you, but if you happen to guess correctly which is my true eye and which is my natural eye, which is my unnatural eye, then I will save you. I won't kill you this time. So the Jew said, clearly, he said, well, there's, I can tell you exactly which one is the natural eye, and which is the true eye, and which the unnatural eye. He said, how do you know? So he said, so then he guessed correctly. He said, well, how did you guess correctly? Was it just haphazard? He said, no. I guessed correctly because I can see if you promise me you'll keep to your promise. He said, yes, I always keep to my promise. I'm still a very dutiful person. Yes, many of these German SS people were very dutiful. And I made this agreement. And I told also those who were in command above me, I keep this agreement. And therefore have to keep to it. So he said, the reason is because there's one eye which I can see is filled with hatred, and the other one is neutral. So therefore, the one that's filled with hatred, and I know you hate the Jews, you have to hate the Jews. The Führer said so, you have to hate all the Jews. So therefore, I was able to tell that the neutral one must be the artificial one. Because you can't put feelings into an artificial eye. But you do. So you guessed right. So we say like this: every human being, his right eye should be used. This is a famous explanation from the Darshim already. The right eye should be used to see only good in the world. As it says, Ohev Yamim Lerot Tov. Everything is for the good. That's the right eye. The left eye should be to see bad. So you should always see good in other people. And always try to be don lechav zechut. Always see good in Hashem. And recognize whatever Hashem does, even seems evil, is for the good. So your right eye should be used only to see good. So for what should you use your left eye? For your own self. Please look at your own self with a magnified glass of all your faults. Look at your own faults. It's very difficult. Because most of us have a blind spot. We don't see our own faults. And if one of the ways where we can demonstrate we don't see our own faults, if you exaggerate faults in other people, that means Bumuma Potter. If you're exaggerating faults in other people, it's your own fault. Here we have an extreme example. Korach could see even misinterpret, exaggerate. Madu etesh nasu, because the truth is, Moshe and Aaron, they brought things against the voice of the people. Well, most of the people said we don't want to go in the land. So Moshe and Aaron said, Hashem said we should go. It's for our good, and they said it's not for our good. So therefore, they imposed on the people, even brought this decree. According to many, I mean, the truth is, the tribe of Levi, apparently, they did not participate in the complaints of the Meraglim. And this whole question, but there's many of the commentators say, a different interpretation, that they were not involved, and therefore, some say when it says, when it says that everyone from the age of 20 upwards, he will not be able to enter the land. But if you look at the expressions of the verse, much more like in Rashi also, it doesn't include the Levim who did not go in the army from 20. They were not amongst those that were counted. So, well, but this is the whole problem. Others say that many of them were. So it's not so clear whether Korach, whether they were part of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, whether they, in any case, they would have died in the course of the 40 years. It's a bit of a question, unfortunately. But in any case, Korach, instead of seeing his blind spot, his left eye, it's his left eye that led him astray. So he said, instead of using his left eye to see his own fault, he saw it in other people's fault. And that left eye is intended to see one's own lowness. These are the words of Meir Shapira. Instead of that, Ra'ashal Shelet Gedulayud, he saw a whole chain of great Gedulit Torah coming from him. And he said, Efsha Gedula Azot Atidala Modri Meni Vani Adom. Rashi says, I should see this great chain of leadership of the Jewish people coming from me, including most of my family, and I should remain silent. So therefore, he spoke out against it. And but Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, what's a Moshe Rabbeinu? Near the end of his life, it says, in fact, it's described on his last day, Lo Chamata Eino. His, it doesn't say his eyes, his eye was not weakened. Although he reached this highest level of any human being, that eye that has to see one's low aspect, the left eye, the self-criticism, did not lead him. He remained the most modest person on earth until his last day. So it teaches us the importance of this humility. Now, I'd say all this comment, and fit it together with the words of the Rambam, which have brought many people don't even know where it comes from. Even the Beis Yosef, who writes the major classical commentary on the Rambam, says, I don't know his source. And what does the Rambam say? A very deep concept. He says, every human being has got free will to become a tzaddik, like whom?
Like Moshe Rabbeinu.
And to become a wicked person, like whom?
Yeah.
Yerovam ben Nevat. No, Yerovam ben Nevat. And I'm really surprised the Beis Yosef doesn't know the origin of this statement. Because it's quite simple. But in fact, I haven't seen it develop properly in some of the forces, but it's obvious. But before we let's understand the principle. How can any human being compare himself to the writings of Moshe Rabbeinu? Such freedom we've got. What's the Rambam mean?
You've reached his height.
How can any human being reach his height?
Well, if you try, keep on trying and trying and trying, you don't know.
Yeah? Well, anyone has another suggestion? Now, the usual interpretation is given by many. It's expounded a lot in terms of Hasidus, but it's earlier in many commentaries. They say like this, the Rambam means to say each person in his situation. Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, even when he was born, the whole house was filled with light. And we see from the Chumash that he was, as it were, destined from the beginning to become great. Although he was raised in the house of Paro, but he resisted it. And both from his genetic aspect, from the family and from the environment. So Moshe Rabbeinu, he merited also to be chosen by Hashem, and then Hashem revealed himself to him in such a manner that this brought him also to recognize he could only continue as the leader if he follows his quality. So in his situation. So we say every person in life is given certain parents that have an influence on him, ancestry. He's given influence, as they say today, order to deal with human being. Person influenced by nurture and nature. Nature is the nature with which he's born, which depend partly on genetics, and also partly on what type of soul Hashem gives him, what type of mind-body relationship Hashem gives him, and also what is given from his parents. And then nurture how he's educated, which situation. So everybody's got different circumstances. So we say in the circumstance which each person is given, Everyone has free choice. Moshe Rabbeinu had free choice. For example, you can understand, he had the free choice to become assimilated to the environment of Paro. But since there was constant connection, still kept up through Miriam with his people in different ways. So when he grew up, it says, he recognized, he said, I'm here, I'm an adopted son of the daughter of Paro, which is also Hashgacha Pratit. I mean, she herself was religious, and she adopted him in the house of Paro. So it was possible to bring him up in a palace surrounded by corruption and idolatry. And nevertheless, not only his real mother, but his adopted mother, also believed in Hashem. And she became, as it were, like a Yorick, or even on the level that existed then, to join the faith of the people of Israel. That's why she nurtured him. But when he grew up a bit, so he became more independent, he went out to his brothers. And then there arose in him, as often comes the situation, a person grows from challenges. So he knew for him was a terrible, big challenge, because he was free to act as an independent person. He had not been a slave. He'd been educated as a prince. So he was a prince and nevertheless belonged to the people of Israel. So he fought against the Egyptian taskmaster, even killed him. He was willing to be courageous because he recognized Sassan was about to kill the Jew, the Hebrew. And that's why he went through different tests to see, you know, does he concern himself with his self-interest, or is he outgoing? Does he possess the quality of chesed? So he reacted his environment to become more and more of a saint. And even when he was, there was also a challenge, when he had protection in Midian. So he saw one of these girls, they would recognize in him a source of truth, although he's an Ish Mitzri on the outside, like an Egyptian person, but on the inside, he was a great saint, and so she also followed the way of saints, believing in Hashem. So she became like a member of the Hebrew people together, that's how they reared the children. So that's how he came, to reach the level, to be a shepherd. All these things added up to him also understanding what is the speaking of leadership. So through these various ways, in every step, Moshe took the choice of virtue against temptation to go into vice, of assimilating to the idolatrous and corrupt environment, or following his own path. And he was able to do it. So therefore, in his circumstances, he grew up to become the greatest tzaddik. Everyone in life has got similar circumstances. And therefore you won't be asked in the future, this is how they put it, why were you not like Moshe Rabbeinu, like the Rambam says. What the Rambam means, you'll be asked in the future, your name is, whatever it is, you know, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, whatever your name happens to be. You, like even his name Moshe, which is given to the Pharaoh, what does it mean? What's the translation of Moshe according to Hebrew?
Moshe.
To pull out others from physical danger and to pull out others from spiritual danger. That's Moshe. We in life also have to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. Are you going to follow self-interest and worship yourself? Or idolatry was a projection of the evil self? Or are you going to follow Hashem? It's Midas HaChesed. So each person's got the same type of challenge, and you'll be asked, why did you not, Mzusha, famous word of Mzusha, same concept, Mzusha. The two brothers, Emerath and Mzusha, Mzusha was a great tzaddik, used to say, they're not going to ask why you're into Moshe Rabbeinu, they ask why weren't you like Mzusha? Why didn't you fulfill your potential? Your potential to give whatever talents Hashem has given you to go and destroy worship of the self and instead put in its place the worship of Hashem, which is worship and following chesed all your life. After chesed defuni. I'll just tell you an episode that happened to me this last year of Shabbos. I'm very impressed by it. You know the last verse of Mizmor LaDavid, after chesed defuni. loving kindness should pursue me all my life, and then I will sit in the house of Hashem all my life. It's the last verse, Mizmor David. It's an interesting. I met with a very rich supporter of yeshivas, and I spoke to him about yeshiva. So he says, you know, he said, all the time, I've got too many, I've got so many moisters running after me to help them. And he says, so I said, I told him the story. Have you heard it from me? Not everybody. He says, what are you repeating? The story is, I knew this person called Mr. Goldblum in the East End of London. And he was a great Baal Chesed. He used to help everybody. He was quite a well-to-do businessman. He had a larger house. Part of the house was used for any stranger that in his life is going back 100 years. Many refugees came to England. So they stayed at the house for some a few months. Many Mishalochim came from every Moisad all over. Rich person. So they could always stay at his house. He used to help them also. Establish them, they should be able to make ends meet, to get citizenship and so on, help them all along. And neglected his business, and of course, neglected business, he had a lot of debts, people knew he used to be rich, but, so therefore they relied upon him, and he couldn't pay back. And he was so busy helping others. And his wife said, listen, I think you have to give up the idea of having the Zachmos Orchim as part of the house. It's too difficult. Because you're neglecting your family also a bit, you're neglecting the business, and you're constantly being pursued by everybody. You promise people are going to help, and then of course you can't help them. Your heart is bigger than your pocket. And in business as well, you're neglecting it. So they had a bit of a debate between what should we do. So they said, well, we'll go to the biggest saint of our generation. It was just the time before the first Knesset Gedolah in Vienna, and they knew the Chofetz Chaim would be there. So they went to Vienna for the Knesset, and they decided, let's go in and ask the Chofetz Chaim. So they went in. I think the Chofetz Chaim used to say Mizmor LaDavid in every meal, generally speaking. The meal may have been Shabbos, also became some Shlishes. And they wanted to be able to consult with the Chofetz Chaim about their problem, because of creating what's a problem in Shalom Bayit. So all that happened was, Chofetz Chaim, he was well known in many instances, he had a terrific insight into so many things and foresight. So all he said, he asked the question. I told this person he didn't really realize what he'd said. Why is the word rodef? Rodef means a person to pursue someone else to kill them or to rob them. That's a rodef. You heard of the Chumash what do you mean achtov v'chesed idafuni? What do you mean chesed should pursue me? We say that a big tzaddik is rodef tzedakah v'chesed. He himself pursues loving kindness. So what does it mean? The chesed should pursue me. So he said, what it means is, if a person does so much chesed that he has all his creditors to whom he owes money, also different institutions to whom he's promised money, and they come and persist. Constantly harass him, and he's suffering from that. So he said, a person should be happy if he's pursued by chesed obligations. Because he's done too much chesed, that brings him worries. That should be the only thing that's pursuing. That means there should be no problem with illness, no problem with the children, he's having great nachas from the children. Very good health, him and his wife. He's got no rotfim, nothing to worry him. Except what's worrying him is doing too much chesed. If that is so, v'shavti b'beit Hashem l'orchim. As a result, I will live in the house of Hashem all my life. Because Hashem wants human beings to do the maximum of chesed. So I said this to him, and he said, your words, the expression you gave to it, you hadn't heard it before. Is the explanation given to the Chofetz Chaim to these people almost 100 years ago? And Baruch Hashem, that family, that children and grandchildren, who Baruch Hashem won't go in the way of Torah and doing more chesed. So this is the good eye. When people look aside from themselves to give unto others. So, any questions or comments?
But does the Kodesh Baruch Hu intervenes with people's lives? And the Kodesh Baruch Hu guides the destiny of each and every individual to fulfill his purpose.
Yes.
And man might have free will, but God interacts with him to bring about his goal.
Yeah, man proposes.
But God interacts with him, so he doesn't have all that much free will if he has to pursue the goal of the Creator.
Yeah, it's good free. Hashem gives each person free will in his situation to make the maximum of the gifts that Hashem has given him. Anyway, to this ant, as we spoke yesterday, Korach, whose negative eye was negative against others, instead of against himself. But what did he do? We spoke about this. He clothed all his people, as well as the head of the Sanhedrin, who accompanied him, in Talit Shukol and Tchelet. And they asked the question to Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, it's still Chai Petitzik. So all laughed at him. And by the way, if you look in the 13 qualities whereby you can dashen, the Torah, the first one is Kal Vachomer. The first one is purely logic. That's why even Atachon Elon Da'at, you say in the morning, in the Brachot, which is the first bracha we praise Hashem for, that He gives us understanding, human understanding. What's the second bracha? Return us to your Torah. Which comes first? Torah or Tzeichel? So in our praise, in our prayers for Hashem for help, first thing is Tzeichel. Because each person is given a Tzeichel, a certain level. And it's got to extend it, maximize it. And that comes before Torah. The person thinks, I will learn Torah without Seichel, doesn't grow. So a person would say, I'm not interested in any learning. Yeah, I don't want to exercise my mind. Then Hashivin Tokatecha. Then the Torah won't make impact on you. Because how can you just learn Hebrew and don't know what the words really mean, don't know what deeply mean of the words? You start reading the Chumash, you don't know what it's all about. Or you misinterpret it. You don't use your mind, which is using Torah Shabbat. If your mind becomes pervert, it's also no good. Then you read the Chumash, and your mind is only filled with, let's say, it's more destructive mind, how to harm to others, only self-interest. You haven't got a clear intelligence anymore. So therefore, whatever part, I mean, if you're a shoita, you've got no seichel, or no cotton, you're potter for mitzvahs, the chedesh. You can't speak, you can't hear. Or a person who's unfortunately insane, you can't learn Torah. If you learn Torah, you just destroy its meaning. The first thing, Atokan Da'at, comes first. Then Hashemim Tukatecha. In the ways of applying Torah Shebaal Peh, the first thing is Kal Vachomer. And Kal Vachomer includes Mamatziv, it's more a question of using logic. So he made a very good Kal Vachomer. Korach was a Bikea. He had a lot of Sikh. But this is the beauty of interpretation. Who was this traveller? Who was the stipend? Did you know?
The grandfather.
The father of Chaim Kanievsky, his father. The brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish. And he was the Gadol of the previous generation. And I didn't have the merit to meet the Chazon Ish, but I had the merit to meet the Tzaitler quite often. It's quite close to him. Took my children, get broken from him. Took one of the Sforim I had. Which, you know, was always on his, the Hakoda was always on his Seder night. And then all questions the yeshiva discussed with him. He also gave one of the first hamlatzot on our yeshiva. So, the stifler, how does he explain talit shikula tzachet? He said like this, a talit is what something you wear either to keep you cool in the summer or to keep you warm in the winter. So, in winter time, it's a talit, it's tchelet made of wool. I suppose a person in the cold winter would wear the talit. So the talit is there to bring pleasure to the body, to warmth to the body. So therefore, the talit represents the human bodily self with all its bodily instincts. And therefore, it represents the benefit I have from it. The tzitzit is not, the tzitzit is a symbol to extend, to recognize that our physical body should not just feel the warmth of itself, but should be used in the service of Hashem. B'chol d'rachil da'il. You've got to know Hashem in your eating, in your drinking, in the pursuit of pleasure. You've got to use that pleasure in order to recognize Hashem. That's the idea of the tzitzit with the sky blue. Take your personal pleasures and recognize that their origin is in Hashem and use them for the service of Hashem. So therefore he says, that's the deeper significance. He went and took a talit shekula tzachelet, and there's a pircha for the kal v'chomer. Your kal v'chomer is that you think the garment is also, the garment is the color of tzachelet applies to pleasures you have from your own self. Because the talit is there to warm up your own mind, body, self. Makes you feel comfortable. The tzitzit are there to draw out that personal selfish instinct and to make it unselfish, to tie it to the power of Hashem. That even when your body is drowning, yourself, you've been drowned in all pursuit of physical passions that draw you away, cause you to drown your spiritual self that disappears. In the mashal we brought yesterday, a person drowning in a storm. You've got to catch hold of the lifeline that ties you to the master of the ship, to Hashem, and to give you the ability to save your spiritual life. So therefore, even a talit, you call it even more, if the sky blue is becoming used just basically as a means to keep your body warm and your bodily instincts warm, so it's there for yourself. So how do you become unselfish? Only through the tzitzis. You know, the concept of religion is connected with the Latin regula, which means to tie. You've got to tie and commit yourself. Tie and commit your physical self to the service of Hashem. And that's the way the Torah. Torah doesn't say, forget about your body. No, use your body, use your self-instinct. Use the joy of food and drink on the Shabbat to be atitanat al Hashem, to make that onik Shabbat and onik for Hashem. The Shabbat is there for that purpose. And yom tov v'samachta v'chagecha, you have to have joy through having the fulfillment of basar v'yayin, of meat and wine, but combined with The Samatha Visimatha bring joy to all members of the family, but bring special joy to the strangers, the Geirei Tzedek, the Geirei Toshav, and bring also pleasure to Almanavi Adom, to all the widows and the orphans. You've got to look after them, especially when you have joy. You've got to always consider whatever you're given is to use it. Some of it is used to service of Hashem, like Masa Sheni, which you have to eat in Yerushalayim B'Kedusha. You've got to serve Hashem, Beit HaMikdash, or today in place Beit HaMikdash, to give to Mosdot Torah and to Bati Knesset, in the Shul, places of Tefillah and places of learning, and use all the physical life in order to recognize the power of Hashem in everything. So that's the true answer to this question. The Al Pi Musa is very important, and it teaches us the what is the great Musa to learn from here. So he ends. Korach was a Bekeach and a Baal Ruach HaKodesh, but because of his personal bias to himself, and he had a claim that Kodesh Baruch Hu, he said, did not command him on these mitzvot and made them up by himself, and Avera Goret Avera, until it became a Kumit Rasha. So here we have a big Musa to learn. Each person's got to be careful of his own personal bias, where he's liable to have a blind spot. Otherwise, he's got to look in the mirror. When you're traveling in a car, to avoid the blind spot you naturally have, you have to look in the mirror. If you don't look in the mirror, you don't know what's behind you. And similar speaking, Musa is a mirror where you look at yourself and try and look at yourself objectively, not with those that magnify all your good qualities or that minify all your evil qualities. Like a person. A person wants really to make sure he's got to look handsome. Yeah? He's got certain, like let's say youngsters have. They have spots on their faces. So they've got to go and sometimes they notice themselves. They look carefully in the mirror and they say, oh, I've got a bit of teenage spots. So I better go to expert to remove them. You can't always see them yourself. You've got to look carefully in the mirror. So also, if you're driving throughout life, you have a blind spot, you've got to look in the mirror. That means also that's the concept. Some say, mine, ponem, and ponem. You can't always see the mirror in the mirror yourself. It's like it says, Shlomo HaMelech. It's the biggest Musa Sefer in the world. It's the book of Proverbs. So it says there that the heart of one person to his other, the mind of one person to his other, is like looking at your face in the mirror, looking face in the waters where you can see your own face. The person can't see his own face so easily. How does he see it? Also his inward fault, he's got to have a chaver, Kenele Bochova, who criticizes you. Because in somebody else, you can see somebody else's fault, that's easy. See your own fault's difficult. So get a chaver to that extent that he can see your fault. And Rabbi Yonah says, Kenele Bochova is one of the essences of Shalom Bayit. You have a wife, the wife is a connector, a wife is there to criticize the husband, the wife, where no one from outside will criticize. So the best marriage is a marriage where there's an openness to take a partner, not only as far as everything in marriage is concerned, but also the development of being able to look aside from self-interest and to be able to see one's blind spot. If you see your half-self in your partner, whether wife or husband, and you approach one another with constant mutual criticism, and you're thankful for it, that's the best way you can grow. So it's good if a person's got a wife who is a big critic. The same applies, the wife is lucky if a husband is the biggest critic. The criticism is given purposely. And in yeshiva also, where you don't have that possibility, make up a chavrusa. It's good to make a chavrusa in learning even when they make mistakes all the time, because each one's got his own type of mind, and therefore one can correct the mistakes of the other. But also, even in learning Musa, the Chavrusa for Musa or Megavad for Musa, where the idea is, let's be open about our faults, and we should be open to mutual criticism to grow in character.
Thank you.
Thank you.